Don't throw too many curveballs at me. The first thing I'll tell you that I always say every single morning to give you a fair warning is please turn off your cell phones and your PDAs, anything that makes noise, because it rudely interrupts our people who testify. If you forget, I'll ask you to make a contribution to the Common School Fund, and hopefully you'll mend your ways. All right, so we're going to get started. First up, we have the Senate President in our committee again. We are so honored. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 517, and I'll have Ms. Richardson tell us what that bill does.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 517 prohibits school district employees from knowingly selling, marketing, distributing, endorsing, or suggesting ingestion of steroids or performance-enhancing supplements to students. It directs the Department of Education to work with voluntary organizations that are approved to administer interscholastic activities to develop steroid and performance-enhancing supplement education programs and include such health information in their health and physical education curriculum. It requires coaches or athletic directors to attend biannual workshops on steroid abuse and prevention strategies for use of performance-enhancing supplements. It defines what performance-enhancing supplements, steroids, and school district employees are. It declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage. There is also a dash one in front of the committee today that changes, a dash one amendment, that changes requirement for the coaches and athletic directors to attend the biannual workshops to training once every 4 years.
Thank you. And Ms. Richardson, we had this bill before us last session. Is this bill any different?
The only thing that I saw was different were the dates of effect.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll ask the Senate President when he comes to testify. Senate President, Mr. Courtney, and Tom Welter, and Dr. Stanford. You're all three up on deck. We like to do things in threes here.
This bill is different.
Please correct me if I'm.
Mr. President, if you will tell us who you are, if you want to tell us where you live, that's your choice.
Yeah, it is.
And then if you can tell us how this bill is different than last.
Describe your house.
Thank you, Chair Walker, and Senator Cruz, Senator Morris, Minister Richardson. I'm Peter Courtney. I'm State Senator, District 11. And I do live in Salem, 2925 Island View Drive, northeast in Salem.
Can you speak up a little?
I'm not going to read my testimony because of your condition, as well as because it's important we get to the individuals that are certified smart. There are technical questions on this piece of legislation. It is different than last time.
It is.
Substantially different in certain ways. Dietary supplements I made a run at last time in terms of coaches and teachers and administrators and volunteers to not be encouraging or promoting in any way, shape, or form their use by athletes, student athletes as we know them. As you know, the bill failed on the House floor. It got to the House floor. It was doing pretty well, and they caught it a pretty interesting battle over there. And even on the Senate floor, I struggled with it because there were a lot of questions about what's a dietary supplement and things like that. And we have here today individuals, witnesses who know wherever they speak, and they can go into definitions. We also got into steroids, because the Statesman Journal recently did an article on steroid use and what it can do to young bodies and in terms of their physical as well as their mental well-being as they get older. And in my testimony, which I'm quickly summarizing verbally as I look at you, is that it is my opinion, and I was an older parent in my life, so my boys are just out of high school by 2 or 3 years. One of them is just out of high school. They played a lot of sports. Also, I work at Western Oregon University. Like tonight, I'll be over there. I'll do the PA announcing tonight, both the men's and women's basketball games tonight. So I deal with a lot of the student athletes at Western Oregon University. And I do believe I can make this statement as a parent, as an individual, as around a lot of young people as well as student athletes, that the pressure to win and the pressure to get scholarships and the pressure for acceptance through athletics is unbelievable. It is unimaginable what goes on today, as well as the pressure to just look good. And I'm not going to get into why this is in our society. You don't need to hear that from me, and you might disagree. But the pressure exists on all of us, but particularly our young people. And these kinds of substances are seen as ways to enhance your performance athletically, to also make yourself look in a way that is attractive. So the pressure is great. And yet the damage they can do to the body and the mind, and we have experts here, is unbelievable, especially as one gets older. So what I'm simply trying to do is to make it very clear that when it comes to those key people in a child's life, And as I can tell you, as a former coach, nothing is, coaches have an extraordinary powerful role in all young people's lives. It's unbelievable the role they automatically have, as well as their parents and athletic directors and administrators. So we're talking here about kind of education programs. We're talking here about saying we don't want certain people promoting or giving certain things to these student athletes. And that is what this legislation is all about in the areas of our student athletes. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to the other individuals here who started me down this path and who have worked so hard last session, and we're back this session because we believe it's a positive bill. We've attempted through amendments and even in discussions they had with me before they had Chair Walker, before I had the LC drafted, not to be too overburdening, overbearing, or too over regulatory in getting in the way of adults. So I said once, the only thing wrong with kids are adults. And I will tell you, this is a famous area for that. I'm just going to tell you that right here and now. And so I'm speaking not to the kids, I'm speaking to the adults here. So with that, thank you, Chair Walker. I do feel very badly you're not feeling well. And with that, if you would, I'd like to turn it over to whoever you'd like to speak here, and I'll just be still and wait for your questions, comments, or criticisms.
Thank you, Mr. President. Gentlemen, which one of you would like to go first?
Okay. Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Tom Welter. I'm the executive director of the Oregon School Activities Association. We're an association of 290 public and private high schools across the state of Oregon. I reside in Portland, Oregon. We govern high schools in 16 different activities during each school year. We conduct 120 different state championships. There are approximately 167,000 students in our 290 member schools. Our studies each year show that about 120,000 of those students participate in one of the co-curricular activities that are sponsored by our association. We govern schools from Brookings Harbor on the south coast to Wallowa in northwest Oregon, from Astoria in the northwest corner to Jordan Valley in southeastern Oregon. Our smallest school this year is Long Creek High School. It has 5 students in the high school. Our largest schools are David Douglas and Reynolds High Schools in East Multnomah County with 2,700 students. You know, the primary concern of the coaches and administrators in our schools is the health, safety, and well-being of the students in our schools, and in this case, the student athletes in our schools. 40 years ago, you know, probably kids got involved with drinking beer and smoking cigarettes. The landscape has changed today. What you witness and what you see in the professional athletic arena and the Olympic arena, don't think for one minute that those same things aren't out there and available for high school students. The purpose of our support of this legislation is we don't think it's appropriate that high school coaches should be recommending or providing any, obviously, illegal steroids or food supplements for high school athletes. If a student athlete wants to do that on his own and they go buy something at a general nutrition center or whatever, that's their business. But it shouldn't be on the recommendation of our high school personnel. We work with a joint committee of the Oregon Medical Association. It's called our Medical Aspects of Sports Committee. We meet with them 4 times a year. They advise us on a regular basis on medical health and safety issues of student athletes. We're here today to support our medical advisors in this area. We also belong to a national organization called the National Federation of High School Associations. It encompasses state associations like ours in all 50 states plus the District of Columbia. I want to introduce Dr. Thad Stanford. Dr. Stanford has been the longtime chair of our Medical Aspects of Sports Committee here in Oregon. He also was a past chair of the National Federation Sports Medicine Advisory Committee, and I'm also proud to say that he's the first medical doctor to be inducted into the National High School Hall of Fame for his work in sports medicine in our schools over his career. So I want to turn it over to Dr. Stanford. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you just take the microphone, Dr. Stanford, that'd be great.
Senator Walker, Senator Cruz, Senator Morris, I'm Thad Stanford. I'm an orthopedist, and I live in Salem. I am an orthopedist, so I can't help you, Senator Walker, very much. Just lots of fluids and aspirin, I guess.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm not going to talk a lot about steroids. I think it's pretty well accepted that they are dangerous and something kids shouldn't be using. But I am going to talk some about dietary supplements, and I'll try to keep it brief. In 1994, Congress passed the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, which basically took the FDA out of any control of these types of substances, and they are, I'll have to read this, they are defined as vitamins, minerals, herbs or other botanicals, amino acids, other substances meant to increase the total dietary intake, a concentrate, metabolite, or constituent or extract. I'm not sure, frankly, what that means, but it certainly covers a lot of ground. This leaves the dietary supplement industry self-regulating.
Yeah.
And that has not been done to any great extent. It has become now a $2 to $3 billion industry annually. And the explosion in advertising, which I'm sure you see, it has been a big factor. The advertising is inaccurate at best. And I don't know that the FCC has done anything about that. So we have poor quality. And I'm not saying about everything, but we have several instances of poor quality. We have several instances of dosages that are not accurate and contamination. One study, which Dr. Goldberg will talk more about, I think, showed that 18% of the substances had some steroid in them. And if you can sneak some steroid in them, you will get some advantages. The National Federation that Mr. Welter mentioned, coverage of 18,000 high schools and 7 million athletes on three occasions, and I put those in the handout, three occasions as early as 1998 came out with position statements opposing the use of dietary supplements. The NCAA also has come out with statements, and little booklet I have is one that they put together. The NCAA and the National Federation, along with other amateur groups, has attempted to change Congress's mind on this and bring a lot of these substances under the umbrella of the FDA. Thus far, they have failed. I won't go into the politics of it, but they're rather significant. Remember that ephedra was a supplement before it killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
Andro was a supplement before it became a problem. As Senator Cortner said, coaches have huge influence over these kids. Also, if you want to have your child take an aspirin in the school building, that has to go through the health nurse or somebody official. However, if they get out on the playing field, they may have in their bag a bunch of these substances. Side effects, there's a handout on side effects, just incredible number of side effects from simple supplements. I just read that grapefruit, for goodness sake, can increase the effect and side effects 10 times of several medications, including cholesterol-lowering medications. So when we cut stuff out there that we're all eating every day that still we don't know about, I think that's the other thing. People are gobbling down large amounts of unknowns when they use these substances. They will react very often with other medications, particularly prescription medications, to cause them to either be enhanced or lowered in effect. The anesthesiologists now are very clear when you're going to have a surgery because they will affect anesthesia. And if you ask somebody, and I do this a lot, what medicines do you take? They will mention the medicines, and then they say, well, what about supplements? Oh, yeah. I mean, they don't consider them to be medicines. And yet, the reaction they've had with anesthesia has been fatal in some instances. And there's also the cost, and they are expensive. I am sure a lot of supplements are good. The other handout I have on the CAM studies show that there is work being done to determine what does what it says it does and what doesn't and what the real side effects are. Of course, if the FDA were involved, a lot of that would be done. The only other thing is I include an article that's fairly long at the end. It's an example of the kind of science we need. When supplements and food becomes a medicine. My only concluding remark is we also have a problem with energy drinks. They're laced with carbohydrates and caffeine. And they are being, and when you pick them up, and I'll just use Red Bull as an example, look and see how much caffeine is that you won't find it. You will find there's caffeine. And that concludes what I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. And I'm looking at your list here, and I'm taking a couple of these supplements trying to get rid of this cold. And I'm finding that they interfere with some of the things that I have going in my body right now. So I think I'm going to stop taking them. And
fluids and aspirin.
Fluids, aspirin.
And rest, Senator.
Rest is probably the biggest thing that I can't do. And that's the problem with so many of us. We just want to take a pill and keep going. And
that's one additional point. We're teaching young people to solve their problem by taking a pill. And there's evidence that kids who get into this situation are more likely to then move on to something harder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that was interesting. Let me ask a couple of questions, then I'm sure my committee has some. And, Mr. President, you're lucky this morning. I'm so under the weather, I have no barbs for you today, so you're going to be able to walk out of here unscathed. Usually we do this little back-and-forth exchange. Let me ask, do coaches have training in nutrition or sports medicine, these high school coaches?
Mr. Welder can answer that better than I can. There is some, but he can give you more details.
Obviously, and Senator or Chair Walker and members of the committee, again, in previous eras, virtually all of our coaches were also professional educators. They were licensed teachers. That landscape has changed significantly in the last 10 or 15 years. Probably, you know, up to half of our high school coaches are off-campus coaches. We do have a requirement as a state association that they go through it's called the American Sport Education Program. And it's a national program that we require those coaches to do. And it has a segment on nutrition, but it certainly isn't the same depth that you would get if you were a PE health teacher, so to speak.
Right.
But we do, there is training involved in that, and we try to make sure they're aware of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate in dealing with high school athletes.
That was a concern to me, and you probably know the Eugene School District, whom I represent, passed a rule that coaches can't give out supplements anymore, because we had a coach doing that at one of the high schools. He now runs the kids sports organization. But, you know, he was recommending supplements to the kids because he had a supplement store and they could trot down to his store and buy these things. I mean, he was an NFL player, but I'm not sure that gave him the qualifications to know what the effects or ramifications were of all of these kinds of supplements. And that was the reason for my question, because I do think people who are certified PE teachers or nutritionists or those kinds of things take lots of hours of training, not just a segment, as you indicate, that your coaches are required to take. So that is of grave concern.
And Chair Walker, in response to your comments, I think Senate Bill 6 that was introduced in the last session was part of the outgrowth of the situation you're talking about in Eugene, where the coach was providing, you know, influencing and providing supplements, and I think the school district determined that they didn't have any policies at that time that prohibited that.
Right.
And I think what the purpose of this legislation is probably similar to what the Eugene School District has done in response to that particular situation. We think it would be appropriate that that's a statewide, you know, situation where none of our coaches ought to be recommending or supplying food supplements to student athletes. That's a decision that the student athlete can make with their parents.
Right.
But certainly coaches, and as we've alluded to, who aren't well trained in that area, have no business recommending or supplying those types of things, because they really don't know what the ingredients are in that food supplement and or what the long-term potential negative side effects are.
Well, also, gentlemen, the sheet that you provided here, and I remember seeing this last time with Senate Bill 6,
yeah,
is the potential problems and the potential interactions. And, for instance, you mentioned grapefruit, Dr. Stanford. My father-in-law read about that in some magazine a long time ago, and he passed away about 4 years ago, but he stopped eating grapefruit because he was on so many medications. He said, I don't know which one of these interacts with grapefruit, so I'm not eating it. He was very clear about that. well, there are things in here that we're not aware of. And a coach wouldn't know that a student had a condition. Maybe they have hypertension. Maybe they have some other issue, and they wouldn't know that. And, for instance, my daughter's a vegetarian. Vegetarians have different needs and different things that interact with their body. So I just think it's so irresponsible recommending these things when you don't know the full extent.
The FDA isn't perfect, but were they to be scrutinizing and... In order to get something through the FDA, you have to show some science.
Yeah.
Whereas without, when you're self-regulatory, you don't.
And, you know, I like to blame a lot of things, bad things that come out of Congress on President Bush, but I don't think he was president in 1994, so I don't get to blame that one on him. Any questions of the committee? Senator Metzger, and then I think Senator Morse, you have one?
Thank you. I'm glad, Senator Courtney, you brought this bill back. As you know, I was a strong supporter of this last time and hope that we'll move it through the entire process this time. But just recalling a couple of the questions last time, I wanted to ask one of those. And maybe, Mr. Welter, you might be the best one to answer this one. In the definition of performance-enhancing supplement, one of those is something taken orally or blah, 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 to induce weight loss. I was never a wrestler. I played basketball. But is there any... Mm-hmm. any type of thing that is considered legitimate, you know, to get weight, you know, when you get down to your 98-pound class, your 108, that is a legitimate something that a coach would have that would be for the purpose of reducing weight, you know, for that particular match. I just want to make sure that that argument is doesn't negate all the other good things in here. And I don't know that there is. I know they do that, though.
Chair Walker, Senator Metzger, in response to your question, I'm not an expert on all the types of food supplements or that are out there, but in response to wrestling in particular, we have instituted over the last 2 years a weight loss program where we actually scientifically check the body fat of each wrestler at the start of the season, and then they get a season-long descent program. They can't lose more weight in any given week than 1.5% of their, and they have a certain weight that is calculated before the season starts what their lowest weight is. They cannot go below that. So we've eliminated a lot of the drastic weight loss that, and the yo-yoing where they would lose, you know, 10 or 15 pounds from, you know, and gain it back and then lose it and gain it back and lose it. We don't allow that anymore. They have to stick to their weight program. They can't go below that. But I think maybe in response to your specific question, I think maybe Dr. Goldberg, who will testify in a minute, has more specifics about your specific question.
And I had just had one more, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. This would probably be for Senator Courtney. I don't see any penalty in the bill. Mm-hmm. So would you just explain that aspect of it? I mean, and the thinking behind it, and if in fact someone were to violate this and were to be challenged, what would be the? Does this create a gray area for a school district?
Chair Walker, Senator Metzger, I'll be frank with you. You could see where I wanted to go with this bill. We'd have five committee rooms right now jammed with everybody. This is an attempt to get the bill passed. I wanted to go mandatory drug testing. You heard that. I wanted to go mandatory drug testing. And the OSCA, they left me. They left me. They sought a divorce right off the bat. They ran out on me. I couldn't even get them to go. They said, "You crazy?" Because I'll tell you where I think we're going in our society. And I have a right to say that. I'll say it here in a minute. But this is his softer and gentler approach. This is a kiss, but it's a warning. And so I don't want to be told it costs too much. I don't want to be told that you're trying to control the life of. You're taking away from my business. So this is an attempt to at least get a warning statement that, look, we're not going to have this going on with our kids. And so it's nowhere near as harsh as I'd like it to be or as strong as I'd like to be. And I'm just being very political with you, Senator Metzger.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Courtney, Senator Cruz has... two drug testing bills in this committee, and he's not getting a hearing on them, so you might have a conversation with him about what my position is on that.
Well, if you allow me to make a short statement when you're ready to dismiss me, I'll make a statement about drug testing, and it will not take long, and so you can you and I can get into it as you dismiss me, but I'd like to make a statement somewhere before I leave, but please go ahead.
All right, well, I want to have Senator Morse ask his question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The intent of this bill, I don't think is in question in anybody's mind. for those yet to testify. It's, I think, the expansive nature of some of the definitions and how they might be interpreted that gives some cause. The question I would have, and I don't know anything about this, okay. I don't know what DHEA is. Could you explain that to me and how this bill relates to that?
Chair Walker, Senator Morris, again, I think that's a very appropriate question. I would like to wait until Dr. Goldberg gives his presentation. I think he is probably the one that has the most expertise in the scientific area that you're getting into in terms of responding to your questions.
Okay.
Oh, you happy with that? We can have...
Certainly,
okay,
thank you.
They're the next panel. Okay, Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair, mine were of a similar technical nature,
okay.
And I'll wait for...
All right.
Thank you.
And Senator Wesson, do you have any questions?
Nope.
Okay,
sure.
Great.
The state of New Jersey has mandatory drug testing. They're starting. But more importantly, the state of Texas, Republican governor, has just stunned the world by saying he thinks the athletic programs in their high schools should start mandatory drug testing, and he's getting a lot of support. State of Texas, where at least young men at the moment of their conception are playing football. And I will tell you that where we're headed, and you can dismiss me, and it's invasive. I know a little bit about drug testing, how it's done, how it's embarrassing, etc., at the college level, what sports, what's random drug testing during play, etc. And I'm going to tell you, the way we're going, this is a cutie. And Oregon, while it's not a state where it's necessarily notorious, but if we don't get a handle on this, New Jersey and Texas, which are out there, both athletic states, particularly Texas, they're talking, they're going to do this. And that's when you do get expensive, and that's where you do get mandatory. So I do think it's serious, and we'll just show you how serious. I thought you'd get into this. We were having a discussion about wrestling before we came up here, because they just had the wrestling tournament out here. Wonderful. I just learned that the thing that's really got wrestling upset now is skin diseases. They tell me it's so bad that in this one state, they had to stop all wrestling in the state, all wrestling for 8 days. Now, we're not going to get into what kind of diseases. You don't want to know what kind of skin diseases. But the medication issue regarding that, you get into medication, then it gets, okay, what medications do you take ahead of time so you don't get the skin diseases? Here we go, here we go, here we go. We're getting much more as a society in the whole area of athletics. You don't play athletics if you're not taking something early. That's just the attitude. That's what we do. You take it before, you take it during, and you take it afterwards. And that is where we're going and have been for some time and our athletic emphasis in this country. And while we used to think about just the pros, and it's in the college, it's now into the high school levels. And so this bill actually did grow out of, Sarah Walker, the situation in Eugene 2 years ago. It was the situation in Eugene is the reason we introduced the bill and they came to me. And I'm not going to name the individual, but that was the reason we started down this path.
And that was the reason I supported this bill back then, and that's the reason I support it now.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I may have a question and a comment after all. Back before electricity, when I was playing sports, they gave us salt pills. Obviously, they have decided that wasn't a good thing. I mean, does this impact that sort of thing? I mean, clearly there was a reason, and it was the team doctor thought it was a good thing, and everybody said, you know, it's going to keep you from cramping, blah, blah, blah. And we used to just eat them like candy. But, and obviously I survived. I may have been mentally diminished because of it. I'm not sure. But, I mean, is this sort of thing addressed here?
I can't be clear. Dr. Goldberg can tell you, but I played when we took salt pills. We also were not allowed fluids.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Right.
Now,
yeah, don't drink during practice.
That was the worst thing in the world. And
right.
And I was back in Michigan where it was humid and hot. But the point is that I think it was coincident with realizing that fluids were okay and we need to push them. And whether the salt pills did anything or not, I'm not sure. They probably didn't, good or bad. But
well,
they may have done something bad. I'm not sure. Dr. Goldberg.
Well, I guess my question was, would a supplement like that be included here? And I'm getting a nod no. And Senator Courtney, I support drug testing. My two bills that Senator Walker's talking about are drug testing for different segments of society than high school athletes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And he knows he's not getting a hearing on those bills.
They're good bills.
All right, Senator Morris, we're running behind.
Okay, just very quickly before we dismiss this panel.
Are
there any things that are legitimately taken by athletes that would be considered a stimulant under this bill that you can think of?
No, I can't.
Chair Walker and Senator Morris, again, I think we need to maybe focus it. The intent of the bill is to make sure that high school coaches aren't influencing, recommending, and supplying food supplements. It's not to say that a student can't take a food supplement. They can go to the General Nutrition Center and buy a leaflet over the counter and take it. But we don't want our coaches recommending that or influencing them to take it. You know, we're not saying that kids can't take food supplements. We're saying that high school coaches can't supply or recommend it to them.
And that's a really good point to bring that back around, what this bill is really about. And if they want to take supplements, they can talk about that with their parents. But we're just not going to have our coaches telling them that this is a good
Correct.
Thing. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. And Mr. Welter, we'll see you next week when we have our OSA redistricting hearing.
Yes, I have found the room. I'll be here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So will lots of other people. Thank you. All right, we're going to hear from Dr. Goldberg, Dave Johnson, and Jamie McCarthy next. We only said it will happen now for the hearing. Okay, we're running behind, so we need to just speed it up. Who'd like to go first?
Madam Chair, my name is Lynn Goldberg.
Oh, thank you. You're a physician, correct?
I'm professor of medicine at the Oregon Health and Science University and head of the Division of Health Promotion and Sports Medicine.
Okay.
And
you have a video for us,
I
Dr.
do have
Goldberg?
A video. I was going to ask if that was okay.
Okay.
A couple of minutes. It's about a program programs that are mentioned in the bill, and
All
that's
right.
why it's appropriate.
Okay. Can we have the lights turned down, please?
Thank you very much. Dr. Goldberg.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this critical issue. I'm a practicing physician and professor of medicine at the Oregon Health and Science University.
Steroid use is no longer just a problem for the big leagues. 850,000 high school athletes admit they've used steroids.
These young athletes are going to do whatever they can to get an edge.
If I were to, like, I wanted to get steroids or something like that in high school, there would be a way of getting it.
I wanted to do it, I could.
The vast majority of steroid users are attending our nation's high schools as we sit here. And many don't have the tools to refuse an offer.
After years of research, Dr. Goldberg came up with an alternative way to increase strength without using steroids.
It's a peer-led program called Atlas and Athena.
This new program, the tests show that it works.
They do a great job with setting the system up, explaining the system to our kids and our coaches, and then running the system in front of us so that we see it work.
That's what we try to do, is teach kids how to get bigger, how to get stronger naturally using state-of-the-art sports medicine nutrition and weightlifting techniques.
My entire life I've been in fitness, and I was really surprised how these kids didn't have this information.
It really helped teenagers deal with the sorts of things that we really deal with all the time.
They weren't worried about my figure. They were worried about me taking care of myself and developing as an individual.
My goal was to get the bench press record for the Franklin High School, and I beat that by 10 pounds thanks to the Atlas program.
We learned we had to separate girls and boys, as their reasons for using these drugs differ.
Atlas for boys and Athena for girls.
Second, the information discussions need to be led by peers, not coaches.
As a teacher, you can tell them something until you're blue in the face.
We've gone down that road of, you know, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, and they just...
Together we kind of learned more than we actually thought we would.
It's very effective to use team leaders with working with team members because peers listen to peers.
Body hair, an increase in sex drive, an increase in body odor. Moving.
Because the chance that I can prove myself and show everybody that
I can be a leader.
We got things pretty cemented pretty fast.
It's remarkable at that age to be able to get that information to them.
Nationally, doctors test these anti-drug programs, and the DARE program, the test showed it didn't do any good.
We found scare tactics, just say no, informational pamphlets, and adult lectures do not deter steroid use.
The Atlas and Athena programs will receive $1 million worth of cash in advertisements in Sports Illustrated. The idea is to create a network of schools that serve as national models of healthy student athletic programs.
We had a big drinking controversy last year, towards the end of the year, so when we were chosen to be an SI school, it was kind of like a big excitement.
There was 50 schools that applied, and the people from Scappoose were so positive about their athletes and wanting to help them that we were so glad to be able to work with them.
And it will change the way your athletes think, the way your athletes eat, the way your athletes feel about drug and alcohol.
This is the first fall athletic season that we've been through without an athletic suspension.
31 Portland schools were used as test sites for Dr. Goldberg's steroid prevention program. Almost every school showed a reduction in steroid and other drug use.
You are able to impact the whole student body, and it's an amazing thing that can happen to your school.
Of course, the pressure is still going to be there, but hopefully they're equipped now with the right information and know how to react to it.
When we see our kids 10 years down the road, I want to feel like we had something to do with them living a good, healthy, productive lifestyle.
Atlas and Athena are examples of rigorous, research-based programs being used for public service. They improve the health of young athletes and recapture the healthy mission of sport.
A few points I just would like to make about the bill, which I think will actually cast Oregon as a leader in education. And although I'm the only person to lead an investigative group in drug testing student athletes in the world to look at a randomized control trial, the results of drug testing is not very favorable. It is not the way to approach kids. It does not reduced drug use like you would think it would do. It has a very, very small effect at a very large price. You can educate kids, 12 students, for the cost of one urine test for steroids. The effects of education will last years. The effects of a urine test will last maybe part of the season. We did not find any effects of drug testing for past 30-day use of any drug or past year use of any drug until 2 years passed and most of the kids had graduated. So I don't think that's the way to go. Education has shown viability and longevity. The girls that we looked at up to 3 years after they graduated high school was a 80% reduction in substances such as marijuana and diet pills. The other thing is that supplements are not regulated, as was mentioned, and the purity of these are really questionable. In a study done by the Olympic Laboratory looking at samples, over 90% of the samples they looked at did not contain what was listed on the label, either too little or too much. And around 20% did not have what was on the label. The International Olympic Committee looked at 600 supplements in the United States and found 18.1% of them laced with anabolic steroids or their precursors that turn right into steroids when you ingest them. So they can't talk about purity. You can't talk about effectiveness or safety. It wasn't until Oregon's Steve Beckler, when he was playing for the Baltimore Orioles, was practicing with him, died, and they found that he was taking ephedra. Did that come to the national attention, even though the FDA had reports after reports of strokes, heart attacks, and sudden deaths among young athletes in older individuals taking ephedra products. So, and there are other products out there today, like Synephrine, that have the same properties as ephedra, and they're still on the market. Today, it's buyer beware. These substances have to literally kill you before they're taken off the market. They don't have to prove effectiveness. They don't have to prove purity. No one is regulating them. This bill does not tell students they can't take these substances. This tells the coaches they can't be selling these. They can't be marketing these. They can't be recommending these substances because they can't justifiably guarantee what's in these products. I think that Bill 517, if it's actually enacted, remember, does not ban supplements, does not ban sports supplements. It disallows school personnel from recommending these potentially harmful products. And it outlines, I think, the most appropriate response for sports supplements and steroids in youth, and gives us the best weapon, which is education. I did prepare something. I know that Senator Morris had some statements about the bill, and I'm happy to address that too. I made copies of some comments about that, and I'm open to any questions. I see the first committee put a lot of questions on me, so I'll stop talking now and
all right, let's hear from our other two panelists, and then we'll have some questions for all of you.
Good morning. My name is Jamie McCarty, and I am the vice principal, athletic director, and head boys basketball coach at Staten High School, and reside in Staten. We had an opportunity last year through OHSU and Sports Illustrated, a grant in Oregon that came out to apply for the Atlas Athena. And we were fortunate enough to receive that grant. And I'm here today to tell you that in 9 years I've been out at Staten High School, and it is the most powerful thing that our students in our community, the most positive thing that I've seen. It's an amazing thing when students get in a room and you got your leaders of your school teaching each other rights and wrong of nutrition and steroid use. And like I stated on the video, we really did have a problem, and I don't think it's solved, but I think we were at 27 or 28 athletic suspensions last year based upon a number of variations of things. And this year we are at 2. At that time we were at 0. But it has the awareness of our school, our students, our parents are talking about it. And our coaches, you know, not only are our students teaching our students the importance of steroid abuse and nutrition and weightlifting and those type of things, but you know, I think you talked earlier about our coaches trained properly, and I feel, you know, right now we have 60% of our coaches are off staff. They're not teachers, they're not educators, mm-hmm. and they are not trained properly. And I think it's a great opportunity for our coaches to be in this process and learning what should be happening with our students and that. It's powerful, and it's important. And I think that the Atlas Athena, this program has, we will, no matter what bill and what happens, we will introduce this to our school every year. We've seen it work. We've seen the importance of it. And it's something that we will do from now on to date because, you know, of what we feel it brought to our school. So I appreciate the time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Mr. Johnson.
Good morning. I'm Dave Johnson, the co-executive director of the Oregon Athletic Coaches Association. I'm a longtime veteran coach, athletic administrator, high school teacher, and we're here to lend our support with the OSAA and the medical committee for this Bill 517. We consist of over 3,300 members in the state of Oregon of coaches. We represent all levels, all classifications, boys and girls, and have a lot of coaches doing good things for the young people here. We do understand that athletes do admire their coaches, most of their coaches, at all the times, and that they are influenced by what coaches have to say and what they have to do and recommend. And we don't see any way possible that a coach ought to be recommending any kind of supplements or anything for athletes to take. We counsel our coaches that they are to work with parents, and parents are work with doctors to make those kinds of recommendations. And I think this is only a win-win. We've always been for it. I think the thing that came out of Eugene a few years ago obviously prompted us to move forward. We would really encourage you to do so. I think what's happened with the media attention of the steroids, we have this gray area today, and if we're if coaches are saying supplements are okay and buy this and buy that, it gets mixed up with steroids, and we're in two different worlds here, and there should be no way that coaches are involved in this thing. We do have an extensive coaches education program. It does not obviously just deal with supplements, but it deals with part of it, and our new enhanced curriculum will even make that better. So we're here to support this bill, 517.
Thank you. I know there's some questions, and Dr. Goldberg, I thought that your comment was appropriate, and I can't find it here, about, where's your comment? Right here. The effects of education will last years. The effects of a urine test will last maybe a season. It's really very clear about my feelings about this bill and why it's important and what I think about drug testing, because it doesn't really solve a problem. It really just allows a student an opportunity to figure out how to beat the drug test. It doesn't teach them new skills about how to do something differently than to try to cheat the system. So I appreciate your program. It sounds really great. Questions of the committee? I know I've got them. Senator Morse, we'll start out with you.
The issue, DHEA.
Okay.
What is it?
Yeah,
what is it doing?
Sure.
What's good and bad about it?
Yeah, DHEA, dehydroandrosterone dione, it is a pro-hormone. The next step for DHEA is androstenedione, andro, which was used by the Major League Baseball players. It's quickly metabolized into andro when it's ingested. Then it can go two ways. It can go into androgen, testosterone, or go into estrogen. So it's a precursor. And so it is a supplement that can turn into anabolic steroids. It was not in the Anabolic Steroid Control Act of 2004. The reason, I was told by Senator Biden's committee, was because they wanted to get Senator Orrin Hatch, who wrote the bill, the supplement bill in 1994. And Senator Hatch, for some reason, did not want DHEA regulated by the bill. One reason may be that Senator Hatch's son is a lobbyist for the supplement industry.
Well, now you're talking politics.
That's right.
You're talking our game now. I noticed the Senate President mentioned the governor of Texas with his new approach to drug testing. He also put out an executive order requiring every young girl to receive the new cancer vaccine for HPV. And what was interesting about it is his chief of staff, his former chief of staff, is now a lobbyist for the drug company that manufactures the drug. I actually think it was a good thing what he did, but the motives are always suspect when it comes to politics. All right, next question. There was a technical question I know that Senator Cruz had.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at things like herbs and amino acids, which I think are good things. So is this just when they're in combination that they become bad? Or?
Well, eating amino acids, I mean, if you eat food, you're going to eat amino acids.
Right.
If you drink a glass of milk, you're going to have amino acids. But when they're packaged as amino acids and amino acid concentrates, you don't know really what you're getting. And when they've looked at what's in the supplement, it's may the buyer beware. So you're talking about packaging a purified form of a substance, and you really aren't guaranteed what it is. I mean, if you go to the supermarket and you buy a steak or a hamburger, you know what you're getting, and it's inspected by the FDA. If you go and get amino acid tablets at a store, you don't know whether you're getting amino acid tablets. And it's not that the student can't go and pick up those tablets. It's that the coach, who can't guarantee what those tablets are, doesn't tell them to go buy that.
Okay, Madam Chair, it's not that I'm just questioning maybe my own behavior here.
Well, I know, I started doing that right away.
I mean, you know.
Out goes the echinacea, out goes the ginseng.
Well, I take current chondroitin and glucosamine because I was told at my age it's not a bad thing to do. but I guess what it comes down to also, because it says herb or other botanical or any other substance other than an essential vitamin or mineral. Is that defined somewhere what an essential vitamin or mineral is?
I mean, essential vitamins and minerals are well defined.
Okay.
But I wanted to show you in the critique about saying that Gatorade would be a supplement. So Gatorade's not a supplement.
Okay.
Gatorade is a fluid replacement. It has minerals in it, it has water, and it has sugar. This is something. Thermo Rush. This is not Gatorade. This has about five times the amount of caffeine that a cola beverage has.
Mm-hmm.
This is different, and this also has some amino acids in it. So if a coach is saying, go get yourself Thermo Rush before you practice because this is going to keep you more alert, that's something that they shouldn't be doing. Because a coach doesn't know the cardiovascular history of the student.
Mm-hmm.
The parents do. The parents don't. The parents can tell them to take Thermo Rush if they want, but we shouldn't have coaches doing that.
Just one more follow-up, because mm-hmm. it's free medical advice.
Remember, you get what you pay for.
I understand. Getting back to my chondroitin and glucosamine, which is not an essential mineral or vitamin,
that's
correct?
Right. Yeah.
But it does have benefits for old people?
It has benefits. In fact, many of my patients are on chondroitin and glucosamine, and it can be very helpful to them. But I'm able to evaluate that in a medical situation, knowing my patient. Certain supplements I recommend to patients all the time, and some I do not recommend because they can interfere with the medication that they're taking or their underlying condition.
Okay. Right.
Senator, you might try ginkgo biloba, which is for memory loss.
I may want to forget a lot of things here, so I'd be okay.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for that informative testimony. We have another panel of three that we're going to quickly move through. We underestimated the time for this hearing. I must have been delusional. Let's see, John Mills, Candy Scott, and Pat, I can't read your writing on your last name, so... Sordell? Sardell. Okay, I'll make that a D here.
You know, Madam Chair, maybe if we all power drink some Thermo Rush, we'll get through this in time. That's quite a name.
Yeah.
Thermo Rush.
I tried a Red Bull one time and took about two drinks and thought I was going to pass out. That stuff was horrid. So they're not going to use me for an advertiser. All right, who's going first? Just jump in. Name, please.
Candy Scott, Madam Chairman and members of the committee.
And you are with what?
My name is Candy Scott, and I'm with Highland Laboratories.
Okay.
And we're a manufacturing company in Mount Angel, Oregon.
Oh.
And we produce supplements as well as body care products. We've been in business there since 1974. And we actually serve the United States, Asia, and Europe. Our company is an ESOP company, and we have 40 dedicated members. I will say that we do random drug testing. I don't know if that how that plays into this, but I was thinking about drug testing, and we do random drug testing. I would like to address some of the things that have been said about the supplement company, supplement organization. Because we are a manufacturer, we know a lot about rules and regulations, and we are inspected by the FDA. We had 4 inspections last year. We are inspected by the Department of Agriculture. We have an inspection at least once a year. We are regulated, very regulated. If you watch the news at all, you'll see that the FTC has been out there in conjunction with the FDA actually challenging television advertisement. There's been pretty heavy fines for misstating the use of something, for alluding to something that really doesn't happen with a supplement. So to say that we are unregulated is absolutely not true. We have very heavy regulations. We cannot cure, mitigate, or prevent a disease in anything that we say. That is the law. So when we produce a supplement, we cannot put literature out that cures, mitigates, or prevents a disease. Anything that we say on the label, anything that we say in literature, cannot include that. Those are our guidelines, and they are very strict guidelines. So when I put together a piece of information about a product, I submit it to the FDA. And the FDA comes back and says, this is wrong, right, whatever. But there are very clear guidelines. So I'd like to take exception to the fact that we are an unregulated industry. We are very regulated, and the rules are very strict.
All right. So with that background, what is your position on this bill?
We support the bill. We would like to see a couple of the terms changed. And what I have stated in my testimony is that the word steroid or the term steroid is not is a broad term. An anabolic steroid is defined, and it's defined in the Anabolic Steroid Control Act of 2004. We all know what that is. And it actually lists the compounds. It's very straightforward. And so I would like to see the word steroid changed to anabolic steroid. I think that that is a very clear and, you know, well understood act, and people really know what that means. The rest of the testimony here, I just want you to know that we produce, out of 300 products, we produce 4 athletic products. They are proteins and electrolyte replacement drink. The electrolyte replacement drink actually was studied at the University of Oregon State and actually improved performance 7%. 15%, sorry. I was thinking of the level of concentration. So what I'd like to see is very clear definition when it comes to steroid. And I totally agree with what's happening with the athletes, and I totally agree with a lot of the testimony that has come before us. But I would like to see that change to really define what we're talking about.
Okay. Great. And so you support the bill because you support it being a choice between a parent and a child.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I just really feel that, quite frankly, when the doctor was talking about coaches not having very much, you know, they just don't go to school or learn very much about nutrition. My son-in-law is a doctor. He has had 4 hours of nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a doctor. 4 hours.
Yeah, so, not very much, is it?
It's interesting that we really don't know a lot about our bodies and nutrition and prevention. And so it's a whole field that we all have to learn a lot more about.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Mills, you're the Director of Quality and Compliance at Highland Laboratories. So why don't you go next?
Yes, my name is John Mills. I am the Director of Quality and Compliance, as you said, Madam Chairman, at Highland Laboratories. I hold a master's degree in biochemistry. My specific area of research was in the area of neurobiochemistry. I have lived in Salem for the last 13 years. With three of my sons have participated in various sporting activities in the Salem area, attending Stevens Middle School and also McKay High School. My sons are currently living in, one of them is living in Sweet Home. He's teaching high school in Sweet Home. He had a very positive experience there, I guess. And another son is currently working in Beaverton, and my youngest son is a Marine, currently stationed at 29 Palms. I'm here today to testify in response to 517, in support of it, with some caveats, and those being specific in the area of wording. Once again, the term performance-enhancing supplement goes in large part with what Candy had already said, in that there are specific products today which are considered supplements that would qualify as quote-unquote performance-enhancing supplements. Some of those supplements are simply amino acids. And when we talk about amino acids, you're looking at a power bar, for instance. Power bars do contain concentrated amino acids, isolated amino acids. Now, if the term is not clarified, anytime you get into an isolated product like that, an isolated ingredient, you are looking at a purified supplement, period. And yes, milk products, although milk has amino acids, as was explained, you can also have products which are high-protein products, an isolated whey product, for instance. Well, anytime you start modifying a product, it falls under the category of dietary supplement. That is the rule. So the idea behind the term performance-enhancing supplement without clarification becomes difficult at best. In terms of a simple use of the word steroid, that is also, in my mind, confusing. Anabolic steroid is a very clear statement. That has already been defined by Congress. That's a very simple, straightforward use of that term, anabolic steroid, and then would also include that the Act of 2004 in the bill to further clarify that particular response. And you know, I'm sorry. It seems like we take a little umbrage at times about people making statements as to unregulated industry. It feels very regulated from our side. When you have the various inspectors come through your plant and impose various mandates by FDA, sometimes it feels almost arbitrarily, because FDA has the responsibility and obligation to enforce the law. That is their responsibility. And dietary supplements were put specifically into their particular arena. Now, it is the responsibility of each supplier of a raw material to guarantee the safety of that product, just as it is the responsibility of the pharmaceutical companies to guarantee the safety of their product. And we all know that Vioxx recently has come under fire for causing death in applications. And to be quite honest, Viagra, which is a commonly advertised on the TV screen,
saw it last night,
has caused more deaths than all of Ma Wong, all the dietary herbs combined. You've had more deaths specifically from that one drug than you have had documented directly as a result of an herbal product. So it doesn't make much sense in that respect. Okay, so even if you have a highly regulated industry, it doesn't seem to be regulated in the same way.
Right.
My comment, I guess my point is that it really needs to be a clarified process. I don't have a problem with saying that coaches should not be advocating product. I believe, though, that coaches need to be advocating product, to be honest with you. But it needs to be through an educational process and not by brand name.
Mm-hmm.
That's my comment. The coaches have to be educated. The coaches have to know the nutrition going into their students. And frankly, when I was running cross country and track, we had to complete forms which said we had certain medical conditions or did not have those medical conditions. So unless the school systems have changed, it doesn't seem reasonable that they would not know those particular aspects.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Sardell, I'm looking at your written testimony. It's pretty much the same as we've heard.
I do have additional.
And so let's keep that short, because you have the same concern about the definition of steroid and performance enhancing. So
absolutely.
What is the additional comment?
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for letting me make the comment. And I actually am a member of the Board of Directors for the Natural Products Association in Washington, D.C. Twice a year I do lobbying. Twice a year I actually go and make an education effort to our senators and congressmen about the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994. You don't have this here on the paper, but I would like to emphasize that DSHEA never took away the FDA's ability to regulate the industry, and in fact, it gave them more power. The problem that the FDA has had, and Senators Orrin Hatch, Senators Harkin, have worked very diligently to try to have the FDA properly funded so that they can do their job. Ephedra actually was taken off the market. That is the DSHEA bill with the FDA doing their job. The problem was that
companies who should have made reports about adverse events withheld that. They have been severely fined. We now, at the very close of the last session, actually got an adverse event reporting bill put into place as a responsible industry. So now there's a certain criteria, but adverse events have to be reported to the companies such as Highland Labs or any manufacturer, who then have to report it to Poison Control or the entities thereof. So there are many levels of regulation. The Shea also provided an Office of Dietary Supplements. They also provided funds for the NIH, the National Institute of Health, that does extensive and growing research on dietary supplements to show their positive impact on people's health. The Linus Pauling Institute also is continuing to do that in my own back door. I am a supplement vendor. I do have a retail store in Corvallis of 25 years. I employ 5 people. I have 3 children who are now adults, who were athletes in Oregon athletics in this school system, and also elite swimmers. They also use supplements, but they use them wisely. And they have suffered no adverse events from using proteins and recovery drinks. I'm not talking about stimulants. I'm talking about dietary supplements that did enhance their recovery and enhance their performance. One of the things on the sidebar that I also wanted to mention on DHEA, DHEA, the precursor hormone, I asked Senator Morris's legislative aide to help me with that. You have copies there of a backgrounder on DHEA. DHEA actually has a warning on the label for people 40 and over. It's not sold to athletes. So in a responsible store like mine, you would not actually, I don't recommend it. I won't sell it. We do not sell it to children or anyone under the age of 40.
But that's the key word right there, is responsible store. That's the key word. There's no regulation that it not be sold to anyone under 40. And it could be sold, correct?
I don't know. Is there a ban on it?
Actually, in the state of California, for the state of California, anything sold in the state of California has to have a warning on it.
But we're in Oregon.
Right. We're in Oregon. But we, nationwide, when we sell the product, we sell it with a warning on it. So people understand that this product has to be used wisely.
All right.
And it can only be used by this group.
Okay. Thank you. I need to close the hearing because we're way over time. I'm not going to go into work session today because I want to talk to the drafter of the bill and talk about some of the issues that you've raised and see if those are things that they would like to change in the bill. But your testimony has been important. We've got your written testimony, and we are reviewing it, and I appreciate that you came today. And thanks for being a business in Oregon that does so well. I appreciate that. All right, thank you. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 517, and we will hold that for a work session at a later date. Senator Devlin is here. Is Tricia Smith back? Yeah, did you? I did. I wanted to do that one first. I'm just going to clean up here. Okay. Colleagues, I'm going to quickly open a hearing on Senate Bill 479 so that we can finish that up, and then right after that we're going to go into Senate Bill 242. There isn't a lot left to hear on Senate Bill 479, and I know Mr. Larry Wolf was here earlier, and is he here today? Yes. Okay. Mr. Wolf, can you come up and offer the testimony that you didn't get a chance to testify on the other day?
Madam Chair, would you like me to quickly describe
the other just quickly one? Remind us about the bill.
This has to do with the replacement of R-type light bulbs with T-type light bulbs. The Dash 1 amendment that you have before you deletes the emergency clause and changes the operative effective date to January 1st, 2009.
Holy cow, we got the amendments?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so impressed with Legislative Council. I didn't think we were going to be able to move the bill today because we weren't going to get that amendment. But Mr. Wolf, state your name for the record, who you represent, and your position on this bill, please.
Okay, thank you. Chair Walker and members of the committee, my name is Larry Wolf. I'm president of the Oregon Education Association. And I'm here today to speak in favor of Senate Bill 479. You know, the other day you heard, I think, very compelling testimony of why this bill is necessary. And I'd like to kind of approach this from a little different direction today, because as someone who served on a health and safety committee for my school district, one of the things that is important is that you learn about these things, because a lot of times you don't know that these conditions exist. But I think it's also important to realize that sometimes when you know about these conditions, sometimes school districts, for various reasons, don't act on them. And so I think that's why this bill is so important, because, number one, it will inform school districts about these halide lights and the dangers they possess. But I think also is the fact that it has a requirement in there that they will have to replace these bulbs at a certain amount of time. And I think, to me, that is one of the things that's important about this bill, because sometimes school districts know about things, they know about the dangers, and for various reasons they don't do anything about it. So today, that's really why I'm here to testify and hope you support Senate Bill 479.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf, and thank you for your patience, and I appreciate your testimony, and you're right. I appreciate that Lake Oswego School District took care of the problem right away, but we have 198 school districts in this state, and if we don't pass a law, they're not going to do it, because they're going to say, well, we've never had a problem. I mean, I can't speak generally that they would all do that, but some may do that. And the testimony was so compelling, and I feel so bad what's happened to these teachers. And I think the district does, too, because, I mean, this isn't something that they had wished on anyone.
So. Yeah, we want to make sure this doesn't happen again anywhere.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any questions? Senator Metzger.
Mr. Wolf, we were on a plane together a couple of weeks ago,
coming back from D.C.
and, you know, kind of groggy in the end of the evening, and here we were on the same plane. So I'm glad you made it back safely as well. My question is, I know this probably isn't your area of responsibility, but do we have any idea of just how many school districts are continuing to use this type of bulb in various places in the buildings?
Chair, Senator Metzger, I really don't know. I know that what we did as an organization, we found out about this issue 2 years ago. We actually, in our magazine, we actually put an article out there talking about these halide lights. We put it on our website, so we've informed our members. But I really don't have an idea as to how many school districts still have these dangerous lights.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Marianne Guest. We want to move this bill, so hopefully it's a quick testimony.
It is.
I think we'll ask about it during the discussion.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Marianne Guest, representing Oregon School Employees Association, and we would just like to add our support to this extremely relevant bill to the safety of our children and the folks that work in the schools. I would just add that a classified school employee was also injured in this accident at Lake Oswego and has since left the district, so we couldn't contact her, but we want to make sure that this never happens again. So really appreciate the committee's support on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we don't want this to happen again either.
Absolutely.
These women are living with some real difficult things and their health needs in their life now. All right,
Chair, no one told me that Tricia Smith was involved in this deal.
Well, that means we need to pass it then. Senator Devlin, would you come up and explain the Dash 1 amendment for us, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Dash 1 amendment will basically take out the emergency clause and give school districts a 6 months additional beyond what the current bill would give them to actually comply. The date that it ends up with is a little bit unusual because it's in the middle of the school year. But by taking out the emergency clause, basically what it would mean is the bill becomes effective January 1st of next year. And because it says it becomes operative 1 year later, that's January 1st of 2009. That is approximately 4 years after the incident occurred with the teachers and classified employees in the Lake Oswego School District. And it's actually almost 4 years after people received notice through DCBS that there was a problem with the light bulbs. I know that a lot of school districts have replaced them. Obviously, the light bulbs burn out, so that they actually obviously replace them when they burn out. And both, I believe, remember particularly that Chuck Bennett attended one of the meetings that we had in Lake Oswego on this and basically said, ban them, give us a reasonable period of time. And I think this amendment, they didn't ask for this amendment. OSBA has not been here, nor has COSA. They didn't ask for it. I'm just offering it, basically, because I know sometimes it takes school districts a little bit longer, and this will give them almost 2 years from the date that the bill passes here in this, in at least in the Senate, and hopefully passes in the House.
Well, I don't know that we needed that. Question, Senator Metzger.
Well, actually, I think it's just your point. I appreciate that. I mean, after hearing the testimony the other day, you know, I'm ready to go tomorrow. Especially since, you know, this discussion did take place 2 years ago, so this isn't like a new revelation about this. So I think when you have a clear and health hazard, that I think your bill is more than reasonable. Like you say, it's been a couple of years since this has received great publicity. You discussed it, I remember, in session 2 years ago. We're talking about light bulbs. We're not replacing buses here. I think the existing language is fine, and I don't think we would need additional time.
Also, Senator Evan, let me ask, and I see Senator Westland has his hands up, so we'll go to him next. You indicated that DCBS put out a notice, and DCBS is defined as Department of Consumer Business Services.
Yes.
Did they put a notice out to every school district?
I believe it was in my earlier testimony, which I don't have before me, but I believe it was to every school district and every potential party that they thought might be utilizing these. It was to thousands of individuals.
That would just be another reason why I don't think we need this amendment. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Devlin, you were one of the few individuals that may be able to answer this question.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you can't, but, okay, we've got 198 school districts. Do you know how many schools we have? Does anyone on the committee know? I'm just trying to do some simple math, because as compelling as this is, you know, what does this cost to do? You know, you can make the argument, you know, if it's some incredibly high number, you know, maybe 2 years is a reasonable.
Senator, you can respond, please,
Senator
by
Westland.
Saying that, talking to him about the price of the bulb. And I think you're being told the number of schools, but Senator Westland, Senator Devlin testified the other day, and he said the average price of the halide bulb is in the mid-$50 range. Am
They're
I correct?
They're both halide.
No, the one that's bad.
R-type.
The R-type is in the mid-$20 range. I'll let Senator Devlin say it because my notes are a little bit sketchy. Which is, the bad one is more expensive than the...
No. The good one is more expensive. There is some feeling that the companies still have a supply of the bad
one.
And want to sell the bad one.
First.
We did have testimony yesterday that's from the gentleman that is the husband of one of the teachers who has done an immense amount of research on this, and he actually did come in with closer prices than what I had because I was going out trying to buy individual bulbs, and said that the price differential was not that great, but there was still a differential that was far greater than the 5 cent difference in what it takes to manufacture one bulb versus the other.
But the point is not the price differential. You know, the point is
the price.
What's the cost of the bulb and how many of these are going to be. You know, if this is $2,000 per school, okay. You know, if it's some much larger number. And I'm just curious. Don't get me wrong. I'm a huge supporter of the bill, and I'm just trying to get a little bit better flavor for your amendment.
Senator Devlin, could you please tell us, and when you answer the question, where are these bulbs usually located? They're not in a classroom. They're
no.
usually in a gymnasium, correct?
In gymnasiums.
There you go. So I'm not sure how many light bulbs are in a gymnasium.
I've seen them with, you know, 8-12 bulbs in them, 8-12 fixtures. I'm sure there are larger gymnasiums than that.
And are there usually one gymnasium per school if they have one?
In the metropolitan area, we have a lot of schools that really don't have gymnasiums left any longer.
That's right.
When we pass the PE requirement, they will build them.
There you go.
And I don't know. I think in fast-growing areas in the state, that could be true also. But I assume it would be about one gymnasium per school. And a lot of times, elementary schools no longer have. It would be nice for them to have. A lot of times they don't have formal gymnasiums. I did make an error in my earlier testimony today, not before, because
okay.
it was in the testimony. It was not DCBS. It was the health division.
Oh.
And in 2005, after the incident in 2004, they sent out 14,000 alerts to schools, warehouses, and businesses
okay.
that might be utilizing these.
And what day was that again? Or when did they do that?
It just says in 2005.
So,
I'm asking anybody, do we know how many schools we have?
Senator Westland, Madam Chair, I regret to say that I don't have that answer today, but I could tell you why I don't. The Department of Education used to publish something I found very fascinating, which was they had a listing of the conditions of schools throughout the state. They quit actually putting that on their website when they felt that they could no longer make it accurate. If you'd asked me 2 years ago, I could have probably answered the question, but today I don't have an exact answer for you. I think I can get an answer for you before it comes to the floor of how many schools there are. And Madam Chair, Senator Westland, I remember your testimony yesterday that you heard and the questions that Senator Metzger had about what does it take to count the number of minutes kids are in PE. I'm not sure how much it takes to count to inspect the number of R versus T light bulbs in gymnasiums. But I'm sure the Department of Ed would come back with a similar number.
Okay.
So then the cost of the good bulb is how much?
50, according to
mid-20s for the bad bulb, mid-50s for the good bulb. The gentleman that spoke that was the husband of one of the teachers said that the price differential was much lower when you purchased in bulk. We were able to obtain these prices simply by trying to purchase one bulb, basically.
Yeah, that'd be a big difference.
Yeah, and he also testified that the part replacement was a mere 5 cents.
Yeah.
Senator Morse?
Madam Chair, this is really shooting in the dark, okay?
Okay.
We have 550,000 students, approximately, in the state of Oregon. And if you had an average of 400 students per school, that would be 1,375 schools and a replacement cost per gym of 12 bulbs, that would be $825,000.
Assuming they all had the R's.
Assume they all had bad bulbs and had to replace them. Now, does that help at all?
Yeah, and I just did some back of the envelope. I came up with 750,000.
Okay.
So the Ways and Means guys are, and we're seeing the OSBA guys nod their head in the background. That, you know.
Close.
Yeah. The number I remember, Madam Chair, Senator Westland, mm-hmm. Senator Morse, was around 1,500. That I remember, but I just didn't want to say it because I'm not sure it's accurate.
I'm going to have one of the school board's people come up. They're just sitting in the back. Come on, one of the guys.
Well, can we get the other guy to come up?
I want you to speak to this Dash 1 amendment because I'm not really supportive of the Dash 1. I just think this is an emergency that needs to be taken care of. So tell me why we should support the Dash 1 and how many schools there are, if you know.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Board Association. I haven't even seen the Dash 1. I understand Senator Devlin just told me what it does.
Yeah.
The number of schools, are you talking the number of schools in the state or the number of buildings in the state?
Senator Wesson, clarify your question.
Gymnasium. Jeez, it's an interesting
auditorium.
Question because, my daughter played volleyball this fall in a school where there were two gymnasiums.
Yeah, some schools do.
Some schools do have two gymnasiums. The number of these type of lights, we have no idea. Should we get rid of them? You bet we ought to get rid of them. And I don't know whether the Dash 1 amendment is too much time or not enough time. We just don't have enough information on that. In the area of school buildings, we have somewhere between 1,400 and 1,600 school buildings across the state. And you've heard today from OSAA, you got Long Creek that has 5 kids, and you got David Douglas that has 2,700 kids. So you got a variety of districts and different sizes across the state. And don't know if they've got them in their building, don't know if they don't have them in their building. I wish I could give you better information. We need to get rid of them, no question about it. From the damage that's been caused and from what the potential damage is to not only our employees in our buildings, but our small and our kids in our buildings. We want to take care of them. Obviously, the faster we can get rid of them, probably the better for potential liability from school districts, the ability to find out how many are out there. Obviously, I think we would support the Dash 1 amendments. We didn't talk to Senator Devlin about them, and we would encourage our districts to get rid of them as quickly as possible. We provide with the Special Districts Association a joint property and casualty liability program for school districts, and I think we should probably use that information and get it out to our folks who purchase their property and casualty insurance through that joint agreement, saying you got a real problem or a real potential problem.
Well, that's, speaking from the legal background that I have, and I know that you're a lawyer, Mr. Green, these school districts are now on notice. They've been served notice through the Oregon Health Division. And if one person, just one more person, gets injured with these current lights, they're going to be sued. And they're going to be sued big time, and they're not going to get out of it because they have been put on notice that these are bad. Wouldn't you agree?
Madam Chair, I don't disagree. It harkens back to our wired glass discussion.
Yes, it does.
And whether you adopt the Dash 1 amendment or don't adopt the Dash 1 amendment, we will get the information out to our school districts that they need to get rid of these bulbs and do it as fast as they possibly can.
Well, and Senator Devlin, without the Dash 1, when do they have to get this done?
It would be
it's replacing
July 1st,
2008. July 1st, 2008.
Yes.
That's a year and a half.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
After the next school year.
I'm ready to move the damn bill. I'm sorry. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I do want to say on the record, we do want to thank Senator Devlin for thinking about the schools
and their ability to
do that. So whether you adopt the Dash 1 or not, we will get information out to our districts to get rid of these things.
Thank you. I'm closing the public hearing.
Can I ask Senator Devlin a question?
One question.
Why did you draft the Dash 1?
He was nervous that the bill wouldn't pass.
Is that the reason, or were you just trying to think that we needed slightly more flexibility?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, I always try to be reasonable.
So you think the Dash 1 is reasonable?
I think that there are probably a few school districts that might say that they need a longer time. However, I would actually agree with some of the statements that people have made. The cost of them taking that longer time might be both in the injury to students and teachers and the potential liability might be far higher than the cost of replacing the bulbs.
You betcha.
Yeah. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just continuing my back-of-the-envelope math, $800,000 to replace these things, 200 school districts. We're looking at $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 per district.
That's right.
It's
and
not
a year and a half.
Not a huge, every dollar is precious to our school districts. We all understand that. But considering the magnitude of the potential injury here, I think that's a very reasonable expenditure, not only on behalf of for protection of the district, but certainly the students and staff.
Thank you. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 479. Open a work session on Senate Bill 479. I don't want to see that Dash 1 amendment, but if you want to offer it, we'll vote you down, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair.
That's my shot across the bow.
We want to vote Devlin down. I mean, the hell with Cruz.
Madam Chair, sensing the temperature of the committee, I move Senate Bill 479 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Very good. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 479 unamended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Further discussion? Senator Morris, you got your hand up.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I was appalled at the testimony and what has happened to these teachers and employees. What raises the question, and I know it's beyond the purview of this bill, and it's actually beyond the purview of states to control product safety, products that are sold in interstate commerce. But I'm wondering if there isn't something we could do to send to the appropriate federal regulating agency a notice that these bulbs should be banned from applications where they would put people at potential sustained risk or sustained exposure, and this high degree of risk. I can't imagine why these bulbs are even allowed to be sold and used in these applications. So I was just appalled at what we heard yesterday.
Senator Morris, I fought the wired glass cartel for 3 years, and I call it a cartel because the wired glass industries, all the manufacturers are foreign manufacturers, and they had a stranglehold on the industry. And on all the building code people and everyone who made decisions about it. And they kept wanting to sell that glass because it's cheap, cheap, cheap. And districts bought it up, and it killed children. It maimed children. And the Consumer Product Safety Commission failed in their job. So it took me 3 years working with the father of an injured young man, and we changed the way things are done, and they can manufacture a safer glass, and these people can manufacture a safer bulb, and they just choose not to do it because it's not as it's more expensive for them. Though the father testified, it's a 5-cent part. You bet we're going to do something about it. Senator Devlin and I are going to write a letter to the Consumer Product Safety Commission when this bill passes. We're going to tell them they need to put the country on notice about the danger of these bulbs. Senator Metzger.
Well, just one final comment to follow up on your comment and Senator Morris, because I was thinking when I was looking at this bill 2 days ago, and how unfortunate it was actually that the relating clause was so narrow. I think it would be, and I will certainly look to see relating clauses to public places, and maybe perhaps find another vehicle where any public buildings in which people gather extend this very same message and make that message even stronger. So maybe we can find that in somebody's committee.
And Senator Metzger, we will talk to Mark Long, who heads up the Building Codes Division, about that.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions? All right, thank you. Ms. Gravel, take the roll, please.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Walker?
Aye. Senate Bill 479, receiving the constitutional majority, now passes. Senator Devlin, you're carrying that.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm so proud of you for bringing this forward. Thank you. All right, we're going to quickly skip to, we're going to have to not here. We're not going to hear two bills today because we've run out of time. We're not going to hear House Bill 2265 and 2266. Department of Education has been told they'll be rescheduled. They're around all the time, so no big deal. So we're going to skip ahead to Senate Bill 242. I'll open a public hearing and have Ms. Richardson talk to us about that. And Senator Devlin, you can just stay right there.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 242 requires school districts to evaluate the need for safety improvements for safer routes to schools prior to entering into contracts for large construction projects. It requires school districts to consider funding such safety improvements within funding of large construction projects and evaluate the potential for joint funding for such safety improvements. It also defines a large construction project. You should as well have a Dash 1 amendment before you that I'll speak to.
Yes, please.
The Dash 1 amendment before you removes the provisions requiring evaluation for safety improvements for renovations that cost more than $500,000 and for large construction projects that do not require bonded indebtedness.
Great. And Senator Devlin, this is your bill. It's a repeat from last session. Is it any different? Identify yourself. Tell us what you're doing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I start, Madam Chair, I had a question for the Chair.
Uh-huh.
Are you due to adjourn at around 10 o'clock?
10? No, 10:15. We go to 10:15.
Okay.
So we have lots of time for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 242. Senate Bill 242 would allow school districts to use a portion of capital bond proceeds to create safer routes for children to travel to and from school. The bill passed the Senate in the last session 20-9 and had only a hearing in the House. I firmly believe that there is a need for the legislation. It is permissive legislation. It is legislation that basically just asks school districts to consider some issues when they go out for a bond measure or when they independently go out for major construction. Sometimes when we look at the issues surrounding children going to and from schools, we seem to think about those in hindsight. After buildings are built, after all the money is expended, and as we all know, once all the money is expended from a bond measure, school districts having extra money available to do things that are needed is in extremely short supply these days. And that's why I wanted to tie this to when a school district was going out for a bond measure. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, in 2005, pedestrian incidents were the leading cause of accidental deaths among children ages 5 to 14.
Oh, my. Would you repeat that?
In 2005, pedestrian incidents were the leading cause of accidental deaths among children ages 5 to 14. It's a nationwide statistics.
Okay.
In Oregon, we do not provide transportation to students who live within either a mile for elementary schools or a mile and a half for secondary schools. I clearly believe that we, and I know that school districts and school boards and administrators, believe we have some responsibility to ensure the safety of those children that walked and biked to school in that mile or mile and a half. For new construction or major renovation, this bill would require school districts to examine the routes children have to take to school and consider what improvements might be necessary to improve the safety of those routes. The decision on that improvements will be made totally at the local level by the local school district, their administrators, and school board. Some of the issues that school districts might find in examining safe routes is the normal thing that you would find with most schools, and that is directly around the school because of the traffic that you have at certain peak times between car, bus, walking, and bicycling. There is normally a high amount of congestion. Simple warning signs, simple pull-out lanes, sometimes provide immense safety if they are considered in advance when you're planning on constructing a new school building. They also might find a lack of safe paths or sidewalks. Sometimes communities have sidewalks that are fairly extensive or paths that are fairly extensive, but they will merely have 100 feet that is missing or 50 feet that is missing. That will put school children at risk because they have to take alternative paths to get around that 100 feet. You also find visibility issues, and visibility issues can be either very difficult to correct or sometimes extremely simple in terms of removing vegetation and some other things. And also there are just some very minor things in terms of an inadequate number of warning signs in terms of children being present or just simply that this is a route for children to school. What the bill would basically do is require school districts seeking a capital bond greater than $1 million or spending more than $500,000 on remodeling, renovation, or new construction to evaluate the need for safety improvements within 1 mile of an elementary school or 1.5 miles of a secondary school, to evaluate the potential for joint funding with other public and private entities in accordance with some of the statutes that we already have. Those of us, and I think virtually all of you, have been involved in one time or another in transportation projects, know that sometimes even modest transportation projects have 4, 5, or 6 different contributors in terms of revenue, whether it's the city, county, state, a local development entity, or a school district. So sometimes here we're not talking about huge amounts of dollars. They should consider including the cost of the improvements that they consider necessary in funding the larger construction projects and include in the public record their deliberations and decision made. Under this legislation, local school districts both determine the process followed and ultimately what decision is made. Nothing in this legislation attempts to dictate to local school districts what their process is or what their decision. It only asks them to step back, take a look, and see if there's some things that they can do when they're going out on a major bond measure to help improve the safety of the children that we are all responsible for that have to travel to and from school. I encourage your support for this legislation. I do have an amendment that I just briefly now discussed with the School Boards Association, and that amendment would take out the renovation projects of greater than $500,000 that are not associated with a bond. That's new from last session, and the reason I thought about that amendment, and I've been thinking about it for several months, is I didn't want to really require something like this when a school district, which many are unfortunately put in the circumstance of, have to save over a considerable number of years to replace a few roofs. And maybe that costs $500,000, but they realistically don't have the money to do other things. So I thought narrowing this simply to when they're going out to a bond measure to the public, not dictating to them what their decision should be or even what their process should be in making that decision, was a good way to approach this bill, because I ultimately believe that people, when given alternatives, will make the best choice.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Cruz likes your amendment and wants to speak to
you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Devlin, I think with the amendment it speaks to what you really want to get after without creating undue burdens. I appreciate you bringing that forward, because these were the changes I would have liked to have seen. So.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator
thank
Cruz.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you for sticking with it, Senator Devlin. All right, we've got three people who want to testify. I'm going to bring you all up at once. Troy Costello, Scott Bricker, and Tricia Smith. Any choice about who wants to go first? Troy, let's hear from you, Mr. Traffic Safety Man.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales, Administrator for the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And my testimony this morning is mainly to the philosophy of what this bill is about. Very often in the transportation stream, particularly when we're dealing with highway safety issues, we tend to be reactive. Something, an incident occurs, a situation occurs, and then we, swoop in and evaluate and look at it and do changes, both behavioral as well as on the environment and the engineering side of things. This bill is an attempt to try and look forward. So when we're doing major improvements in and around schools, we're looking at a situation where we're siting a school, very often in some of the cheapest land in the area, where there's not a lot of houses. Need to pre-think about the fact that when houses are developed and businesses come in and infill in that area, the dynamics of the road system, the interaction of the people walking, biking, the buses, parents driving their cars, how does that all interact in a different environment than what those roads and streets were originally built for? So from a highway safety point of view, looking proactive, trying to do some pre-planning and talking about the safety of children, the interaction of the different variants of traffic in order to make a difference for safer routes to school, makes sense in one of the few cases we're actually able to look forward instead of trying to react to an unfortunate tragedy in the state. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd be more than happy to answer questions once everybody has their chance to bring their items forward.
Okay, let's just hear from the rest of the panel, and then we'll ask some questions. So, Mr. Bricker, you want to go first or next?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Bricker, and I am the policy director with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and also advocate for the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition. Both are nonprofit organizations. The Bicycle Transportation Alliance works to increase bicycling in the state of Oregon, working with the bicycle industry. And, of course, the Pedestrian Coalition is very similar, but for the
pedestrian industry, although we're still yet to make good partnerships with the running shoe companies. Both the organizations, the BTA and the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, have been working on the issue of children walking to school, bicycling to school for some years. And the Safe Routes to School program concept is the mantra that we work under that. We are involved with the Oregon Safe Routes to School program. That's housed actually at the Transportation Safety Division. And we were involved in legislation in 2001 and 2005 that helped create that program. We help run programs. We're officially a contractor in the city of Portland for the Portland Safe Routes to School program. And some of the handouts that are behind my testimony are from that program, and I'll go into those a little bit more detail later. The reason why we're so interested in bicycling and walking to school by children is the landscape has significantly changed. In 1970, over 50% of children biked and walked to school, and within a mile, almost 90% of children biked and walked to school. And most people, the baby boomer generation and whatnot, when you ask them, most people biked and walked to school. It was just something you did. You heard the uphill both ways in the snow. that has changed. 10% of children bike and walk to school, and a small number of kids within that target zone actually bicycle and walk to school, many times just because of small transportation improvements that are required. As everyone here knows, the school districts and the cities are really, they have their own governing boards. They don't necessarily make decisions together, and this program works to integrate those things. Children have become more overweight. In Oregon, 28% of eighth graders are overweight or obese. The terminology they use for children are different than for adults, but it's a huge issue. Not getting in, obviously you heard about the PE issues. Bicycling, walking to school. I bicycle my stepdaughter to school most days, except when I'm in Salem. It's a great way to get education, especially when in her school she has PE once a week. As well, some studies done in California, a variety of other states, have shown that 20 to 30% of the morning traffic is from taking kids places. And if you've ever gone in front of your local school, and I'm sure you have, you see the traffic jam in front of those schools. This is a big issue, and sometimes it's just a basic infrastructure problem, whether it's school siting problem, whether it's transportation problems right in front of the school site, or perhaps a little bit of ways out, but major issues here. As well, and this is something that is a larger issue, but this bill gets there, at least talks about it a little bit. The state of Oregon pays for 70 to 90% of state school bus funds. Hundreds of million dollars a year. It's a big issue, but the state basically foots the bill. This bill could actually have the impact of reducing overall transportation costs in the long run, especially if you target the nearby children. So we think this bill helps get to the problem, helps solve the problem, and while we haven't seen the Dash 1 amendments, generally I think those are good amendments for new school siting. Although I would like to add, and I haven't talked to Senator Devlin about this, I also think this issue could be dealt with when you look at school closure. School closure is a problem that we're having because children then have to go to further go out to further schools, and actually having to do a transportation analysis when you're looking at closing schools and see what the extra costs associated with that would be. That would be important information for us. I do want to note, and I mentioned this, that in 2001, the legislature passed ORS 195.115. It basically stated that schools, districts, and cities or counties, and this is on the back of my testimony, would identify barriers and hazards to children walking or bicycling to and from school, and that they may develop a plan. In 2005, the Oregon Safe Routes to School program was created, House Bill 2742, and in that process, any program that gets money through the Transportation Safety Division must develop a plan. Now, the reason why I bring that up is I believe that one potential linkage is to actually have the school districts use, or at least as a framework, the plan structure that's already been developed in the Safe Routes to School program in Oregon. There's already a plan structure that a group of folks, including the education community, has hammered out, and my attachments get to those a little bit. The first attachment shows a draft, a quick fixes report. From an engineering standpoint, this takes about 11 to 20 hours. a more full report would take an additional 20 hours. You're talking about 40 hours, perhaps around $5,000 to produce. When you're developing a new school or even closing a school, that seems like a reasonable investment. As well, now this is the city of Portland realized, but the next page shows some improvements that they've done that they think will significantly increase safety at a variety of schools, and these are mostly low-cost solutions. And if you look at the last page with the color pictures, it identifies different types of solutions and the costs associated. So sometimes you have a median island that costs a couple $1,000s that could make all the difference in the world in crossing the busy street that doesn't let, I mean, a traffic signal, of course, is $250,000, but many of these improvements are smaller improvements that would be important. So from our standpoint, doing this analysis could help identify $25,000 of improvements that could completely change the ballgame for a whole group of kids that wouldn't have to be bused anymore. So that concludes my testimony, and I'd also be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brooker. Ms. Smith.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and in deference to your time constraints this morning, I will keep my testimony very brief. OSEA supports Senate Bill 242 and its amendments. We would have suggested, if we were going to draft this bill, that it go a little bit further and suggest that school districts raise the issue of how children will get to and from school to a higher priority in their planning process for new schools. Often bonds go to the voters without the inclusion of school buses, and then after the schools are built, often well away from children, where children live, then the district has to figure out how to transport them. Transportation of students is a serious issue and should be at a higher priority in planning, and we think this is a good step in that direction. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Devlin's back there. He's going to come up and respond to something. Any questions of this panel? Thank you. I'm making it. I'm going to get there this morning.
Wow.
Senator Devlin, you had a further comment. I appreciate, and Mr. Bricker, I appreciate all the detail you provided. I think that was really great, as well as our other testifiers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to let you know, as the representative from the School Boards Association left, they support the bill, particularly with the amendment to the bill.
Okay. And can you just respond to Ms. Smith's comment that she had wished the bill had maybe asked that they put it as a higher priority in the bond selection process? Did you think about that when you were drafting the bill?
I did think about some of those issues, but Madam Chair, members of the committee, that might be an item for a future discussion, but I actually have a lot of faith in local school boards. And I think simply by asking them to consider the issues, they will focus in more on this issue. There is a slight issue that I do not even know the answer to. Sorry, Senator Westland. And so I'm not so sure that if the need is for new school buses, I'm actually almost think that the answer is no, that they're not eligible for bonds under our current constitution.
I think that would be true.
Yeah.
Trisha's nodding her head yes, so.
Yeah.
No, they're nodding their. Come on up.
The
somebody.
Nod is the wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, if we brought that up, let's get it on the record.
Yeah. Three nods, four, two nods again.
Yeah, we got nods and shakes and everything. My head's kind of doing that this morning.
For the record, Marianne Guest representing Oregon School Employees Association. We have been involved in a series of bills that are discussing the age of a bus and replacement and the dollars to replace, and have found that yes, in fact, school districts may go out with a bond and ask for bus replacement money if it's designated in the bond. If they actually write that into it, they are allowed to get bond money that way for replacement of school buses. I was not aware of this. This is what the Department of Education has told me. And I think some of the school districts are not aware, and we should really get more information out there so that they will start doing that, because there are a lot of dangerous buses on the road.
Right. Well, I think we have a bill this session on diesel and trying
to that we're working on, right.
Get those buses cleaned up a bit. Senator Morse, you have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anything in this bill that would require the Oregon Department of Education to write administrative rules and then come back and ask us for additional money to enforce?
No.
Similar to what we're considering for counting PE minutes?
I don't think so.
No. I would think that the only role that the Department of Ed would have is, and I'm not an attorney, and is that if a school district didn't at least discuss the issue when they went out with a bond measure. I mean, this, I hate to use that word, some people don't like this word, but this is a permissive bill. It allows the school districts to determine both the process and ultimately to determine whatever decision they want to make.
School boards like that.
Yes.
I mean, they like being able to make some of the local flexible decisions.
Right. Yes.
They should be able to.
That's right.
And so the only role I think the Department of Ed might have would be if a school district hadn't at least publicly considered the issue of safe routes to their schools when they were putting in a new building.
Better bill than it was last time.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you, Senator Devlin. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 242. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 242.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 242.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 242. Any discussion, committee? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Next motion.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 242 as amended to the floor to do a pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 242 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion or comments?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I want to thank the good senator for the amendment. I think it makes it, from my perspective, a better bill without putting undue burden, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, we like this amendment. We didn't like the last one. Any other comments or questions?
One for two, that ain't bad.
That's okay. Pretty good.
And make him the greatest hitter in Major League Baseball history.
All right.
You got to have more than two at bats.
Well, I think it's really good because of the double hit for Senator Devlin, because it takes the pressure on me having to do anything with his ATV bill now.
I know.
We won't go there. We won't go there. All right, Ms. Gravel, take the roll, please, before we close this down.
This is the amendment, right? Aye.
No, this is the bill.
Oh, we've already done the amendment. Okay.
Yeah, we're voting on the bill.
Senator Morse? Aye.
Senator Leslie? Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. So 242 passes and goes to the floor. Senator Devlin, you're carrying that one, too. You're taking work out of the hands of my committee. Colleagues, we're going to have to do one quick thing before we close out. We're opening a work session on Senate Bill 706.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move that Senate Bill 706 be reported out without recommendation and that the bill be returned to the President for referral to another committee.
Well, I don't know that I can repeat all that.
Just say what he said.
It's somewhere here. Here we go. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 706 be reported out without recommendation and that the bill be returned to the President for referral to another committee. The discussion about this, colleagues, is that it accidentally got sent to this committee and it needs to go
where it belongs.
And I think it's going to the Environment Committee because they have another bill, and we don't want to split up these bottle bills, and I really don't want to deal with this. So that's the discussion. That's the reason we're doing it. Any other comment?
Can we just pass it?
Yeah, we can just pass.
We're in work session.
Right? No. We can't do that. That isn't the motion. All right. Does anyone object to the motion? If not, so ordered. All right. Okay, colleagues, thank you very much for your patience and your good work today, and I hope to be better next week. See you then. And we have a big hearing on Tuesday. OSAA redistricting issues. So be prepared to listen and contribute. Thank you. We're adjourned.